Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi everybody, it's Rob from robnunphoto.com with episode 211 of the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Merry Christmas to everybody. I'm recording this at 1 o'clock on the 25th of December 2012, just in that sort of little gap between the turkey coming out of the oven and carving it, so I've probably got about 25 minutes with which to record a quick podcast, and then when I can get back to the festivities downstairs with everybody, we're all just kind of having a quiet half an hour, so I thought I'd sneak up and record a podcast on my laptop. Well, hope everybody's got what they wanted for Christmas. What I'm going to talk about today is some goodies I got from the car boot a couple of weeks ago, some thoughts about this year's photos, the latest Android photo editing app that just came out, and what I got for Christmas today as well. So, what did I get recently? Well, I was very lucky. Went down the car boot a couple of weeks ago. One of the last ones we got to go to, actually, because it's been raining so much here in the UK. In fact, there's loads of flooding everywhere, and it's really sad. Lots of people are having terrible Christmases where they've been flooded out. I went down the car boot and got a couple of things. First thing was, I got one of those little action cams. It looks like a tiny little mag light, like an aluminium torch, but it's not. It's a video camera that you can fix onto like a crash helmet or a motorbike or a BMX for Oliver. The idea behind getting one was to attach it to that quadcopter I got a while ago to review. Gave it a go, but unfortunately, because it's got metal body, the camera's just slightly too heavy, and so the copter can just about get off the ground and hover quite low, but it couldn't really get much height. Now, it could be because the day we were testing it out, me and Ols, it was very windy, and so the copter was struggling to get up anyway. But I think maybe what I need to do is get one of the slightly different cameras that's just made of plastic, because I was looking forward to kind of, you know, getting it up to go up quite high and then sort of flying around Gosport taking video footage. But anyway, I put the bracket onto Oliver's BMX and we did some test shots with him riding around, and the video really is quite impressive. It's only 640 by 480 on the one I got, but it only cost me a tenner from the car boot, and you can get them from eBay really, really cheap. But it looks like it's going to be lots of fun, and obviously not the quality of a GoPro, but the idea is there as well. But the other thing I got, which I was well chuffed with, was another flash. And I know you're probably thinking, Rob, you know, you've got lots of flashes, haven't you? Why do you need another one? Well, because this one was a YN, another Yongnuo one, 565EX. And you're probably thinking, you know, what's different about the YN565? What's different about it is the fact that this one has actually got TTL metering in it when it comes to the flash. Because all the Yongnuo flashes I've got so far have all been manual flashes. So what you do is you put them on top of the camera or on top of your wireless trigger, and you adjust the output of the flash manually. You know, you say more power, less power, and so you kind of control the look of the photo. Normally you're in manual, manual mode on the camera, and you set your shutter speed for your ambient, so, or you just set it to around about a 200th of a second, because that's the maximum sync speed on my 350D, and then you use a combination of your aperture and your ISO and the power of the flash to light sort of your main subject. And it's a really good way of lighting, because you have control over everything, every single aspect of the scene. You know, and if you want to see your subject slightly brighter, you can move the flash closer, or you could increase the power of the flash, or you could open up your aperture, or you could increase your ISO, and vice versa to make it darker. But obviously it's not that fast, because it's not been done automatically. When you're using your pop-up flash, excuse me, on your SLR or on your compact camera, every time you take a photograph, what happens is that with the flash is firing twice, once to light the scene so it can judge how much light it needs, then it fires the main flash again with the main flash, and so it's adjusting the power of the flash automatically. And in fact, on an SLR like the 350D, the pop-up flash is always automatic. You can't manually control the flash. You can turn the power up and down a bit using exposure compensation, flash exposure compensation, but you can't manually control the flash. But the beauty of that, the ETTL flash exposure, is that, you know, it's incredibly fast. In the old days of flash, what you would have to do, and if you've got any old flashes you'll know this, you'd look on the back of the flash and it would give you a guide. So it would say, you know, if your subject's 10 feet away and you then you need to be at f5.6 to get proper exposure. And they'd have these sliders that you could move around depending on where your subject distance. But with an ETTL flash that you put on the top of your camera, it works just like your pop-up flash. In fact, it works out the exposure automatically. You might say, well, so what? If the pop-up flash does that, why do you need a big flash to do that? And the reason for that is because your big flash, you can bounce it, and you can put it in different positions. So you can have ETTL metering while you're bouncing the light off the ceiling or off a wall. So all of a sudden, you know, when you're running and gunning, say you're chasing a kid around at a kid's party, but you don't want that harsh on-camera flash, if you've got an ETTL flash, like the Yongo YN565EX, or, you know, any of the Canons, Nikons, any of the own brand flashes, the flash is firing twice when you say you're in aperture priority mode. It's firing twice, you don't notice, but it's metering the scene and then firing the main flash. And this enables you to work very, very quickly. You're losing that control that you have, but what you're gaining is speed. So you're in a situation where speed is important. Say, like today, when we were all opening up the presents at 6:30 this morning, you know, I didn't really want to be mucking around with the manual flash, because I was changing position all the time, altering the camera angle and everything like that. All I wanted to do was bounce the flash off the ceiling so that we got a natural looking light rather than the harsh on camera flash. And because I was using the YN565, it did all the hard work. Very, very simple. And of course, these flashes are normally quite expensive on eBay and new. Nowhere near as expensive as a Nikon or a Sony or a Canon one. But I was very lucky that the two guys who were down there who sell the cheap photography gear were there, and I picked it up for £20. £20. Very, very impressive. Now, although it does the TTL stuff, the ETTL, so it can work in automatic mode, it also does still have a manual mode, so you can run it where you can control the power. It's also got the two traditional slave modes, so you've got slave 1, where it will fire optically when another flash goes off, and slave mode 2, where it will wait for the pre-flash. So if you're using your on-camera flash from your SLR or your compact, and you move the flash off somewhere on a little stand, normally what would happen is if you just have a simple slave mode, when that pre-flash goes off to meter the mode, your slave flash will go off too. But with slave mode 2, it doesn't. It waits for that first flash and then fires with the main flash. So it's a very simple and, I'm pleased to say, very reliable way of having a slave flash. I mean, Oliver got some new handlebars and a new seat for his BMX, and we just fitted them, and he wanted some photos. So I was out in the garden with another one of my Christmas friends, I'll talk about in a minute, but we were using the 565 in its optical slave mode outside in daylight, and it was firing away no problem at all. So very, very impressed with that as well. It can also become a slave as part of Canon's, now I don't know much about this, but Canon have a wireless system in the newer cameras. I don't know if it's infrared or how it works, but it means that you can control the flash remotely. So if it's off somewhere, you can control it, and the flash will talk back, and normally this is on Canon's higher I think you're like your 580s and things like this, and like your latest 7Ds and things. So I can't test that because my 350Z doesn't do that. And it also has a multi-mode, which is really interesting, which is a strobe mode. Now, don't get it confused with high-speed sync. What it is imagine those photographs you've probably seen of a bat flying across a scene, and you see like four pictures of the bat with its wings in different positions as it flies across the scene. And the way that you do that is that you have the camera fixed, the subject's flying across the front of the camera, but the flash is firing multiple times, so the flash is going pop, 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 pop for each exposure. So the exposure might be a quarter of a second or something like that, and the flash fires like four times to capture it doing that way. And so this camera, this flash has that as well. So what you do is you can put in the frequencies per second you want the flash to fire, the hertz, and the number of times you want it to fire, and then it will strobe like that, so you can do interesting effects. Again, I haven't really played around with it, because it kind of harks back to the days of film photography. But, you know, I fancy having a go with that. What it doesn't have, although it's pretty much a copy of the 580 Mark II, the Canon, it doesn't have high-speed sync. So you can't sort of set your camera to a thousandth of a second and the flash turns into a really fast-firing strobe to do that. But it does everything else. And I think, you know, for £20, it was quite a bargain. But the proof will be in how durable they are. But I know I'm going to have a lot of fun testing it. So watch the blog and the YouTube channel for reviews. Now, I know it was a while since the last podcast, but one of the things we set up was a photo assignment where we were going to look at our old photos and post them in the Flickr group. I'm glad to say there's lots of great work being showed and reasons why people enjoy taking and showing these photos this year. But I've got to admit, I was probably a little bit apprehensive about it because I didn't really think I'd taken that many great photos in 2012. It's been a bit of a thin year in terms of quantity and quality of shots. You know, I've spent a lot of time experimenting with different cameras, playing around with flashes, and generally just not taking as many photos as I'd like to due to sort of work commitments as well. But after I spent, you know, a couple of hours going back through the photos I've taken in 2012, I was really quite pleasantly surprised with the quality of some of the best. So I've created a set in my Flickr photo stream, and I've added a few more onto that thread in our Flickr group. So, you know, it just goes to show you that even if you think maybe I've had a bit of a thin year, go back and look through those photos, because you might be surprised at what you've done, and it fires you up ready for the next year as well. I'll do a proper assignment review in the next podcast. But it also highlighted to me how using something like Flickr is really helpful, because it gives you this tool this filter, if you like, for the quality of your photos. Because, you know, you go out, you take a load of photos, don't you? And you edit some of them, and then the best ones you'll upload to Flickr, won't you? So that gives you an edit straight away, where you're self-editing. You're only uploading what you think are the ones that you want other people to look at, which is great. And if, like me, you might even create a secondary set. So I have like all the stuff I upload to Flickr, and then I have another set which is my best of photos, which after I've looked at them for a while, I'll add into that set, and then a few of those might even get added to a portfolio that I do separately. But that's another kind of filter that I add. And because they're linear, they're in time order, it's very easy just to go back through, you know, one at a time, like that one, favourite that one, add it to this set. And it kind of gives you an idea of the style you're developing over time. And it also shows you maybe some holes that you've got as well. Like one of my biggest holes is I enjoy taking, for example, black and white photographs with architecture or landscapes in, but often they feel a bit empty because they need people in them. So I kind of can see that thing, right, that's what I need to start doing. And I enjoy it. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you're considering posting some photos in the Flickr assignment over on the Robin Photo.com Flickr group, or you're a little bit apprehensive about doing so because maybe you thought you haven't taken that many great photos or photos you might want to share in 2012, you know, have a look first. You may well be surprised. I know I was. I thought I've probably taken one or two photos that were any good, but I actually taken, you know, quite a few that I thought were all right. So there we go. So have a look at your photos and go for it. So a really exciting development if you've got an Android phone that happened. There wasn't much fanfare about it. I was very surprised. I think I read it on a blog somewhere, was the fact that Snapseed has come out for Android. Now, Snapseed is, well, on iOS, on the Apple mobile platform, was probably the best photo editing app, the most well-respected photo editing app, made by Nik Software. You had to pay for it, but Google recently bought Nik, and Nik are famous for like SilverX Pro, Viveza, ColorFX Pro, HDR, is it FX Pro as well? You know, these great plugins for Lightroom and Photoshop, and I use SilverX Pro and use the HDR one too. And then they made Snapseed, and everybody loved it. So Google bought them, and everybody was like, ooh, you know, what's going to happen? But I think what's going to happen is Google is going to integrate all these great tools into their photo editing software. So the first thing they've done is that Snapseed has been rewritten for Android and released, and now it's free on Android and iOS. And quite simply, it's blown me away. It ticks all the boxes, and it may well even take over from Vignette as my photo editing app, mobile one of choice, because it works on full resolution images, and when you save them, it saves them at full resolution. Very important. Lots of the photo editing apps can do all these fancy things, but they save smaller images. You know, who wants that? It can do proper rotation, you know, straightening of images. You can't just go left and right. It really, you can straighten lines. Superb. And it's got great cropping. It's got fantastically subtle black and white conversion as well. So you can add like coloured filters like red, green, yellow and blue, and you can alter things, obviously contrast, brightness, sharpness. Amazingly, it uses their U-point technology to do selective adjustments as well. So you can, for example, in a landscape shot, select the sky and then adjust the brightness, darkness, contrast in the sky, which is brilliant. It's also got everything that Nik's famous for, which is they kind of have this sharpening feature. I think it's called Detail, I think. Let me have a look. Let me just fire up Snapseed and see what it's called. Where is it? It's not Clarity. Here we go, Snapseed. Let's see what it says. Here we go. Bear with me. Selective adjust. Tune image. Here we go. So you can do global adjustments, but then you can do selective local adjustments as well. It's better than sharpening, and you can do sharpening as well. And although it could do all these subtle things, it also has like fake HDR. You can add textures, you make things grungy, you can add frames, cross processing, you make it look like old film. Very, very powerful indeed. So just go over and grab a copy of Snapseed on the Google Play Store. It's free, it's great, and I can't really say anymore. I'm so excited it's come to Android. But the thing I would say, and I've already done a video review of it on YouTube, is although I've done lots of demo images with that have gone over the top, you know, rein it in. You can do so much, but often less is more. So here we go, I've got to speed up now because I can smell everything's almost ready downstairs. So Christmas presents, what did I get today? Suzanne got me this amazing Richard Avedon book called Performance. Richard Avedon, one of the most famous photographers in the world, sadly passed away, famous for his fashion photography, his work with all sorts of like asylum inmates, and generally being one of the leading portrait photographers, you know, of his era, of his generation. An amazingly generous guy in terms of sharing what he knows as well. I mean, if you do a YouTube search for Avedon, you'll find all these interviews. And this is a beautiful volume. It's called Richard Avedon Performance, and it's got lots of rare work in there, stuff from the theatre, actors, actresses, models, that sort of stuff. Really nice book, so thank you very much. She actually got me a bit of a rude one as well. I've got the the mammoth book of new erotic photography, so I'm looking forward to having a look through that later. So that's good. And The present that I knew I was going to get was a pair of light stands. So now I've got proper light stands for my flashes and my wireless flash system. And the difference between a light stand and a tripod is the light stand is a lot more lightweight, and the legs kind of splay out right to the bottom, and they go a lot higher than a tripod, and they have this little like stud connector thing on top that you put your umbrella brackets on. And so they don't like take up all the space of a tripod. So I've got two of them, so I can put my umbrellas on there and do some really interesting work without having to try and hack around with my tripods, which I have been doing. Right, so there we go. I hope everybody's had a fantastic Christmas. I have so far. I can smell the turkey and the roast potatoes and the vegetables. They must be coming out of the oven now, so I've got to go down and carve everything up. Thank you very much for everybody for listening to the podcast over the past year. I might be able to squeeze another episode in before the new year, but if I don't, Happy New Year to everybody. Thanks everybody for commenting on the blog, taking part in the Flickr group, and generally being part of the SEL Photography Podcast and the RobNonPhoto.com blog. As you know, my name is Rob from RobNonPhoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.